or at highway12winery.com.
The Red Grape, located at 529 First Street West, across from the Plaza in Sonoma. The Red Grape features New Haven-style pizza with thin, crispy crust high-fired in a stone-lined pizza ovens. For more information, call them at 707-996-4103. Visit their website at theredgrape.com or find them on Facebook at The Red Grape.
Unicom Tax Services, located at 755 Broadway. For more information, you can call 707-343-1898 or you can visit their website at unicomtax.com.
The Sonoma Valley Visitors Bureau, the only spot to get a regional parks pass in the valley, reminding you to support local restaurants by ordering direct and picking up your food in person. For more information, visit sonomavalley.com or call 707-996-1090.
Sebastiani Theater, located on the Sonoma Plaza. The theater offers a year-round schedule of films, live music, comedy, magic, and theatrical performances. It is also available to rent for private events with seating for up to 320 guests. More at SebastianiTheater.com.
And now back to The Morning Show.
And we're back. It is The Morning Show at 9:01. I'm Marcia Meekumber, your host for another hour. And I've been talking off air, but you get to hear now on air with Chris Burdick. He is the author of the brand new book, Clamor, How Noise Took Over the World and How We Can Take It Back. Chris is a journalist who writes about science, health, technology, and education. He's got two books out there. He's been a staff editor at The Atlantic Monthly in the past. He's also been an editor at Mother Jones. So lots of experience. And he had a rather interesting story, which I hope he'll share, about how he got interested in the topic of noise and how it affects our daily lives. You look back at this several years ago and then had a little COVID detour, as did so many. Tell us a little bit about what brought you into investigating noise.
Yeah, happy to. And Marcia, thank you for having me on. I wrote an article for the Boston Globe Sunday Magazine in 2018 that was about a public health researcher at Harvard who was focused on noise. And it was really fascinating to me. I had not really thought about noise as a pollution mm-hmm. before. Started to read the epidemiology and saw how many aspects of our health are impacted by noise, not just our hearing, but our heart health, the risks of hypertension and stroke. And when you have a hearing, it also affects how we think, our cognitive development, and you have increased risks of depression and dementia associated with it. And it struck me that we have this massive pollutant out there that no one can really agree on the definition of, which I thought this is something worth looking into, which I did for a number of other magazines, and eventually got this book contract. And as you mentioned, there was this detour of sorts. So when I got the book contract, that is exactly when the pandemic really hit our shores and, yeah. and our world. And you probably recall that among the things that happened was when cities shut down the roads were emptied and the planes were not flying and the businesses weren't operating, one of the side effects was more quiet in yeah. many places.
Buses running, their bus routes, fewer airplanes in the air. Restaurants were closed, so none of the clang, clang, clang that goes on in restaurants all over the place.
Exactly. And it was this kind of double-edged sword. People were remarking on it, obviously. They were noticing it. They were noticing birds. Suddenly they were wondering, are there actually more birds now than there ever were? In fact, no, you would just hear them. Yeah. But on the other hand, you couldn't escape the context of this quiet. Prior to this, anybody who cared about noise would think, what is our goal? Our goal is a quieter world. Underline that. That's right. It. Well, we had achieved that, but you couldn't escape the fact that what was attached to this here was this catastrophe.
That's right.
You had, people sick and dying, people losing their livelihoods, people not able to see one another. There was this aspect that made me think about what is the end goal? How important is kind of context in defining what we want besides just less noise? What do we actually want our soundscapes to be? Right. So that's kind of what drove the book in a lot of ways after that detour.
Yeah, fascinating. And as an interesting related story, actually, the Sonoma City Council has just been addressing a new noise ordinance that is out for its public, comment and review period. Now, this is not just a noise ordinance that's no lawnmowers before 8 o'clock in the morning type of thing. This sound ordinance is trying to begin to address some of these larger issues that you've identified. And we do often think of noise as being the annoyances, the lawnmowers at 8 o'clock in the morning, construction noise from a nearby complex going on, new housing development, the buses up and down the street, airports, restaurants. But noise can be other things too. One of the things that you ran across that I found fascinating was that some researchers related noise as being as serious a problem as secondhand smoke. Can you talk a little bit about the consequences of unwanted noise to the human body and our environments?
Yes. So that comparison is controversial, but I'll skip that controversy for a minute and talk about your question. When we talk about the impacts of noise on our bodies, I'll separate that from the very high decibel impacts, 85 and up, let's say, which can be directly harmful to our inner ears and our hearing. And then below that, though, there are a range of impacts from noise to sleep disturbance, to adding to chronic stress. Our hearing system is a defensive sensory system. If you think about at night when you're sleeping, you are very vulnerable from an evolutionary standpoint. Your eyes have closed. Mm-hmm. So your ears are still standing guard and listening. Every now and again, they will perk up about 20, 25 times during the night. They will naturally just come alive and scan the environment. This is what the sleep researchers have seen. When you have sound coming into the environment from, say, transportation noise, starting at around 45 decibels, this starts to increase the number of times that your ears are attuned to it and are waking up the rest of your body in a way that it doesn't wake you up. It's just a sort of physiological change. So your heart rate, which is usually resting at night and lower, rises again. Your blood pressure grows up again at spikes. So this happens, and if it happens more and more, it becomes a chronic issue that has these cascading effects on your health.
Right. Right. Well, when you talk about sleep, a perfect example is the fact that mothers seem to be highly attuned even in their sleeping moments. Baby cries out in the middle of the night, boom, fully awake, having to deal with it. And of course, it does have a major effect and impact upon their health for the loss of sleep when they do, in fact, have to be getting up to feed baby throughout the night. But there's also some corollaries to daytime effects that you told at least one very interesting story about what it was like in New York for a public school that was very close to some public transportation. One side of the school building, the classrooms were very close to the clickety-clack, and the other side of the school was not. And they actually were able to measure a difference in the students' learning and cognitive abilities that were going on there. Can you fill us in on that story on what they found out were the impacts of the noise on that side of the school?
Sure. This is a classic study from the people that are into understanding the impact of environmental noise. It was from the 1970s in New York City in Washington Heights, mm-hmm. kind of up the top of Manhattan, where there was a school that had an elevated train running around one side of it, and they found that the reading scores of the students on the noisy side were, depending on the grade, up to a year behind the people that were on the quiet side. And actually what they were able to do, this is the person who did this study is named Arlene Bronzaft, and she's sort of the called the noise queen of New York City because she's become the go-to with these issues there. But she was able to get the Department of Transportation there in New York to put padding on the tracks where the trains came through. And she was able to get the Department of Education to install noise absorption, sound absorption in the classrooms to quiet them. And they found subsequent to that the reading scores had evened out after those mitigations.
Right.
So these things are, they're real impacts and they are solvable impacts. You know, you have to take them one at a time. Right. They are not, there's no silver bullets here, but yeah.
Yeah, that's a good thing. You also talk in the book about social justice and sound. Minorities are typically more greatly impacted by noise than others. I think in terms of communities where transportation corridors have been literally cut through neighborhoods, eminent domain has been used to carve out land to be taken and used often for freeways and other things. Can you talk about then how the subsequent noise impacts minorities and disproportionately makes their lives more difficult?
Sure. Well, you covered the first part, which was that, you know, a lot of these communities were redlined in the 30s and 40s, and they had a kind of a cyclical disinvestment in them. And so they became the sort of neighborhoods of least resistance when a highway was being routed somewhere, or somebody wanted to put a trash incinerator somewhere. So all of these pieces of infrastructure have a lot of noise. They have a lot of other pollutions as well that come with them. So you have this combined impact from these things that that affects health. To think about noise exposures impacts, there's the exposure part, sort of how much noise are you having to deal with, and then there's kind of a vulnerability piece. So if I'm living with a certain amount of, say, 70 decibels of noise coming at me from a train track, but I live in a high quality house with good windows, and I can keep my windows closed at night because I have air conditioning, and I have otherwise, you know, good health because I excellent medical care, etc. Then I'm less vulnerable to that that noise coming. But so you have these, many of these communities, have lower quality housing. They don't have the ability to keep their windows closed at night. They have other impacts from those same sources, whether it's particulate matter or other air pollution. So it's a double whammy of impacts.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. I was just reading somebody's Facebook post of returning from China and visiting many cities. And they remarked about how much quieter major cities were because of the higher level of adoption of electric vehicles. And they were rather astonished that just the cacophony of traffic was vastly lower. So it sounds like down the road, assuming America doesn't completely reverse itself on adopting alternative fuels, energies, that perhaps if we're leaving behind the combustion engine, there's actually ways to mitigate noise in neighborhoods all over the place. Can you talk a bit about how do we start changing noise pollution and reducing it?
Sure. It's a big issue, which is that vehicle noise, transportation noise, and mostly from internal combustion vehicles, is probably the number one source of urban sound that there is. And so people will say that, you know, cities aren't noisy, vehicles are noisy.
Yeah.
So at any point when you can reduce that by smart urban planning is a really big piece. There are obviously technological impacts from switching over to quieter vehicles from electric vehicles. Gradually, hopefully, we'll make that transition. And when we do, we'll want to pay attention to the sounds that we add to those vehicles. They're, you know, they have to have sound added to
them, right?
Because they are so quiet.
Yes.
And you know, we can add sounds to them that are just following some kind of regulation, that are, you know, plain old beeps, like the trucks backing up that we hear from time to time that drive us crazy. Or we can take care to design these sounds so that they don't constantly annoy us, that, that they are actually useful without being just tugging at our sleeves all the time and being just another new source of noise that comes along with that technology. So I think that's forward thinking is, I think, key to this.
Yeah. Yeah. And what should cities be thinking, you know, what should cities be thinking about in terms of planning their noise ordinances and not just saying, you know, no mowers running after so-and-so? What are other approaches that cities can make, you know, to improve the lives of residents and reduce the noise pollution in their cities?
Well, one way is to talk to people. And I think a lot of the times we fall back on prohibiting certain decibels from certain sources, and we put them into our noise codes, and then they're not enforced, and they just sort of become this dead letter. But if you actually talk to the communities and you say, you know, here's what we are planning. We want to build this mixed-use area. We want to have commercial districts, but we also want to have some open areas for people to gather. There, you can start to talk about how the soundscape will be designed. So if you have a park, you might want to make sure you have enough trees that are there to block the sounds of the nearby roads. You want to have maybe even some like a natural berm to block the sound. Water features will help there. When you plan where your outdoor restaurants are going to be, you don't want to include, you don't want to have them right underneath where your office space is. Or if you do, you want to make sure that you include enough sound absorption between the floors to deaden that noise. So I think there's a lot to be said for having a noise ordinance and for having that enforced. But I think there's even more to be said for approaching the projects that you're building in your cities with sound in mind and designing by listening, both to the people that are going to be affected. And now it's more and more possible to actually simulate what that place will sound like after you build it.
Sure. Absolutely. And of course, we've had sound designers in Hollywood creating sound environments and soundscapes for decades who intimately know how to make, you know, minute adjustments, and which totally changes the feel of any given environment. So lots of sources out there. We just have a minute left, Chris. What else would you like to mention for our listeners before you have to go?
Well, I'd like to say that, you know, noise is something that people wonder, you know, why should we care about it? And I think people care about it in the moment. They care about it at 3 a.m. when the car alarm is blaring down the street. They care about it when they're in the hospital and their loved one hasn't been able to sleep. But we need to think about noise systemically as a problem that we collectively create and can collectively solve, or at least mitigate, rather than just having it be individual gripes. That's, I think, my big message.
Okay. All right. Well, I think it's a strong one. I think it's a worthy one for us to do. We've been talking with Chris Burdick. He is author of the brand new book out now, Clamor: How Noise Took Over the World and how we can take it back. Chris, thank you for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Have a great week. Thank you. Bye-bye. All right, listeners, we're going to take a quick little break before we come back with Josh Silver. He is author of the new book, Ending Redlining Through a Community-Centered Reform of the Community Reinvestment Act. We're going to be back with Josh right after this.
You've been listening to The Morning Show, sponsored by
Highway 12 Winery. More information, 707-938-8815 or at highway12winery.com.
The Red Grape, located at 529 First Street West, across from the Plaza in Sonoma.
Unicom Tax Services, located at 755 Broadway.
The Sonoma Valley Visitors Bureau. For more information, visit sonomavalley.com or call 707-996-1090.
Sebastiani Theater on the Sonoma Plaza, offering live shows and event rentals. More at sebastianitheater.com.
Programming for KSVY is brought to you in part by The Schoen Group, located in beautiful downtown Sonoma. SchoenGroup.com. This health moment is brought to you in part by Sonoma Valley Hospital.
Your mother was right. Eat your vegetables. Fruits and vegetables are important to our health, and the growing season brings so many fresh varieties to enjoy. They can help reduce the risk of obesity, diabetes, heart disease, and some cancers. They also provide important vitamins, minerals, and fiber that keep our body healthy and strong. Try to include 2 servings of fruit and 3 servings of vegetables each day. A serving size is around 1/2 cup.
Artists, here's your chance. The City of Sonoma's Utility Box Art Wrap Program aims to transform ordinary utility boxes into extraordinary works of art. As part of the city's public art program, this initiative brings vibrancy to our streetscapes, showcases the talents of local artists, and celebrates the community's unique identity. Vinyl-wrapped art installations turn functional infrastructure into eye-catching public pieces that reflect Sonoma's cultural, natural, and historical richness. The city is currently accepting proposals for its pilot phase. Up to 5 utility boxes will be wrapped with original designs submitted by selected artists or artist teams. Deadlines for entry is July 15th, 2025. For details and submission requirements, go to sonomacity.org/utilitybox-art-wrap-program.
And now back to The Morning Show.
And we are back. It is The Morning Show at 9:23. I'm Marcia Meekumber, your host until 10 o'clock this morning. And we're going to pivot to our next guest, author Josh Silver. He has a brand new book out today called Ending Redlining Through a Community-Centered Reform of the Community Reinvestment Act. And the title, the subtitle might have kind of a bit of a mouthful to get that all out. But, you know, it's all about fairness and establishing or trying to reestablish some equality out there, which, as we all know, is not the easiest thing in the world to do. Josh has spent his career for many years as a senior fellow with the National Community Reinvestment Coalition. And he has talked redlining for years and years and years. He has testified in front of Congress about it. He has helped advise in writing legislation regarding all of this. And there's more here than I ever knew. For instance, Congress passed the Community Reinvestment Act in 1977, which I was totally unfamiliar with. But how much a dent we've made, I don't know. But that's why we're going to turn to Josh and find out. Good morning, Josh, and thank you for joining me on The Morning Show.
Well, good morning, and thank you so much for having me.
So let's talk a little bit about, first, the Community Reinvestment Act passed in 1977. Did it accomplish a lot, or has been an uphill slog before and after 1977, from your point of view?
Well, both and. It has accomplished a lot, and there is still a ways to go. CRA was enacted in response to redlining, which is literally drawing red lines around neighborhoods. And banks would tell their loan officers and people in branches, don't make loans in these neighborhoods. It's too risky. And believe it or not, this practice had been going on for decades. It was formalized between the federal government working with private sector, made these maps, literally redlining maps. And you can imagine a neighborhood will not thrive economically if it cannot get loans for home ownership, small business ownership, and for other needs. So Senator Proxmire in 1977, you know, senator from Wisconsin, was working with some very ingenious advocates. There was a woman named Gail Sincotta. She was known as the mother of CRA. Let's impose an obligation on banks to serve all communities, including low and moderate income communities. And banks get a report card based on how many loans, investments, and services they make in low and moderate income communities. A grade, like A, B, C, D. Mm-hmm. Imagine if your report card from school was on the internet. You'd probably work a little harder. And that was the insight. And this public accountability did increase lending, as revealed by a number of studies I talk about in my book. But there's a lot of communities out there that, from decades of redlining, remain economically disadvantaged.
Yeah, which is unfortunate and slows so many things down, because that's more hurdles for the people living in those communities to overcome on a daily basis. You know, I was just talking with another author about noise pollution in a specific neighborhood. Services often don't reach certain neighborhoods or aren't as thorough, and that can become a big problem as well. How do we now start to better empower communities, particularly since it seems under the current administration, any action that we take to try to empower underserved communities, to try to move forward on racial justice, is kind of shot down. What can we do?
Well, I think that we use the language of just good old American capitalism. This is going to make capitalism work better in all communities. Who can be against home ownership and small business ownership? People working hard, you know, want to play by the rules, lift themselves up by their own bootstraps. This is an American as American pie. And there has been discrimination that has prevented communities from doing this. And that CRA empowers communities by, in a sense, getting communities at the proverbial negotiating table. It encourages partnerships between banks and community organizations, like a nonprofit housing developer, because a bank has to demonstrate it is reinvesting in communities, and it will finance, say, a nonprofit housing development. Anybody can comment on a CRA exam, or when banks want to merge, banks have to demonstrate a public benefit. So that's also another key time for community groups to comment. Mm-hmm. And administrations vary in how friendly they are to encouraging community participation on CRA exams. There was a major reform under the Biden administration to improve CRA exams, make them more robust, more opportunities for public comment. Biggest reform in 20 and 30 years. Trump administration has come into office and has pledged to roll it back. And this, in a very concrete way, means billions of fewer dollars or loans in low and moderate income neighborhoods. So the way we counter this, or the way we try to discourage attacks on CRAs, this is making capitalism work in all communities. Nonprofit organizations and concerned citizens should literally show their members of Congress the benefits. Look at the street, look down the street. There's an affordable housing development made possible by CRA. A lot of community organizations I work with have done that and have actually convinced enemies of CRA to become supporters. And I'll just mention real quickly, I spent my career working at the National Community Reinvestment Coalition, which is a coalition of 600 to 700 community organizations across the country, including a lot of great ones in your great state of California.
Yes, we try to work at it here. And I was trying to think, oh, You were just talking a bit about various CRA exams, and I bet you for most of our listeners, when they hear the word exam, they think either about a doctor's exam or they think about exams in, you know, college, high school, school, for some sort of certification. Exams have a different meaning with the CRA. Can you explain that a little bit so folks understand what you're getting at there?
Well, right. Most of us don't like exams, but, you know, most of us also don't like eating spinach. But if you do it, it's healthy for you. So I think that's one thing that banks have, a lot of banks believe that CRA is good business and has opened up profitable lending opportunities that they would have otherwise overlooked. Because there was decades of discrimination.
Yeah.
So it makes them work harder in underserved communities. So you can literally, for the biggest banks in the country to the smallest banks in the country, in any state, look up a CRA exam for a bank headquartered in your state and look and see what's the percentage of loan, home ownership loans they've made to low and moderate income people.
That's right.
Is this bank working with a housing counseling organization to do home ownership counseling? And you can literally get concrete examples of, you know, beneficial activities. Mm-hmm. And so it can be a very empowering exercise. Oh, this bank hasn't partnered with a small business technical assistance provider. I am a small business technical provider in the bank's footprint. I'm going to go talk to the bank CRA officer and see if we can work something out. That's how the process is supposed to work.
That's
through transparency. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's a good way to bring it up and to explain it is this is publicly available information that you can find. It's available on the internet because the act exists and forced all this information to become available. Although the Trump administration may be attempting to roll all this information back, there are loads of communities like ours who want to move forward and reduce any sense of redlining or even correct past redlining problems. What are some things that they can look for or steps that they can take to get away from any sense of redlining?
Well, I think, again, looking at CRA exams in their community, seeing what banks are doing well, what are the gaps, and what will likely happen in the coming months is the CRA, the law, will survive. Mm-hmm. I don't think they have the votes to repeal it.
Okay, and that's good.
And in past times when there have been attacks on CRA, actually you have banks that testify in front of Congress for the act. Right. Because over the decades, there has been an infrastructure built up of community organizations and banks, a huge infrastructure. And they all know it's profitable business. So working together, I believe we will defend it. Now, what will happen is that what is likely to happen is there'll be a rollback in the examination or the regulation. Mm-hmm. You know, to give you a quick example, the last time the regulation was changed was 1995. Mm-hmm. And we didn't really have the internet, if you remember, 1995, right. Barely. Now we have the internet, and there's a lot of banks that make loans through the internet or through the brokers, not around their branches.
Yeah,
there's still a lot that make loans around their branches, but the internet lending is increasing. So how do you examine banks that, say, have a lot of lending activity in Sonoma, but not necessarily a branch? The 2023 regulation would have done that. We're going to examine where there's a lot of lending activity, regardless of whether there's a branch or not. That might go away. And that's not sustainable. It's not sustainable in 2023. 1995, it may have worked. So what we're going to do is we're going to keep working together and building more of a coalition of partners to support this critical law. And then hopefully in future years, when there's more a favorable environment, we'll go back and strengthen it. And hopefully in ways that banks and community groups, at least to some extent, can agree with.
That's a good start. That's a great way to go. And as you probably know, Chris, California has a mandate to build a lot more housing in its next housing cycle. I forget how many bazillions it is, but it's a big number that the state is requiring of all the municipalities around the state. And the challenge that they face is that states and city municipalities don't build, new housing developments. Contractors do. Developers build all of these. How do we connect with the developers who are interested in reaching out for affordable housing, the big challenge of the U.S. right now? How do we connect with them and empower them using the CRA to bring forth more of that type of housing?
Well, that's a very insightful and great question. And actually, this is an issue around the country. There's a national housing shortage. I spend time in both Maryland and Connecticut, and there's actually a big bill in Connecticut right now to encourage towns to build more housing, to reform zoning, so it's not mm-hmm. only single-family zoning, but small multifamily units as well. And I know this is a big issue in California as well. So all of these tools have to work together, zoning reform, CRA, and then talking about your developers. Well, they need financing for housing, and they need to get loans, construction loans from banks. So, and a lot of them build affordable housing. They want to. It's part of their business. So, they should actually become more knowledgeable about CRA and work with nonprofit organizations and community advocates and, approaching banks and seeing if we can do affordable housing deals. And this is all what CRA makes possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The more we know about it, the better, because it seems, from my point of view of my limited knowledge, but watching a development go up right next to my complex and others, that developers are interested in making the largest profit. Why wouldn't they be? And therefore, they want to minimize the amount of affordable housing that they're required to build. But are they available that there are types of loans for them that would make it possible to offer a larger percentage than they're required of affordable housing in the development proposals that they make? This seems to be the big disconnect, is that with our capitalist system, it seems like it's questionable whether or not we can even have that, because it's all a matter of who can make the biggest profit, instead of connecting people up with nonprofits that can help make that happen and with lenders that can help make that happen. Is there a path for that?
Yes. Well, and also the way to kind of respond to that is there is a tendency under capitalism to serve the rich. That's where the profits are. But what CRA does is it pushes the private sector to say you can't only serve the rich. You got to serve all communities. But, think about a car company. They can't only sell Cadillacs. They also have to sell cars for the common person. Yeah, it goes back to Henry Ford.
Yes, the Model T.
Can't only sell cars for rich people. But yeah. But getting back to brass tacks, there is a federal tax credit called the low-income housing tax credit, for example, that is one of the major forms of affordable housing production in this country, rental housing for low and moderate income people. And mm-hmm. Developers and banks get credit or points on their CRA exam for these low-income housing tax credits deals. So that's how, again, we can use CRA to combine with other efforts to provide, hopefully, an adequate or more than adequate amount of affordable housing.
The incentives are out there. Josh, we just have about 30 seconds left. What would you like to tell our listeners about ending redlining through a community-centered reform of the Community Reinvestment Act?
Well, I think one thing is CRA works best if the communities are front and center and heavily involved in its implementation. I will just tell people to go to the WIPBOOKS website,
Right.
Andredline.com.
It's really easy.
Mm-hmm. Andredline.com. Or just look up Josh Silver Ending Redlining.
Yeah.
If you just type in Josh Silver in a Google search, you're going to get a heavy metal rocker. So
yes.
You got to type in Josh Silver and Redlining. And I hope people buy the book or look at
Yes. Yes, it's fascinating to learn about this and detail heavy what you go through and explain in the book. We've been talking with Josh Silver, author of Ending Redlining Through a Community-Centered Reform of the Community Reinvestment Act. Josh, thank you for your time this morning. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. It was fun.
Thank you, Josh. Have a great week.
Okay.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
You too. Sure.
All right.
Bye-bye.
We're going to take a quick little break before we come back with Deborah Myers right after this.
You've been listening to The Morning Show, sponsored by
Highway 12 Winery. More information, 707-938-8815 or at highway12winery.com.
The Red Grape, located at 529 First Street West, across from the Plaza in Sonoma.
Unicom Tax Services, located at 755 Broadway.
The Sonoma Valley Visitors Bureau. For more information, visit sonomavalley.com or call 707-996-1090.
Sebastiani Theater on the Sonoma Plaza, offering live shows and event rentals. More at sebastianitheater.com.
Programming for KSVY is brought to you in part by The Schoen Group, located in beautiful downtown Sonoma. SchoenGroup.com. This health moment is brought to you in part by Sonoma Valley Hospital.
One of the easiest ways to stay healthy is to take a walk. Walking just 20 or 30 minutes several times a week can pay big benefits. It improves cardiovascular fitness, helps maintain weight, strengthens muscles and bones, and reduces the risk of developing many illnesses such as heart disease and diabetes. And it's convenient. You can walk at your own pace any time of the day. So get out and enjoy the beautiful fall days here in Sonoma and do some good for your health in the process.
Please teach me how to swim.
Please teach me how to swim. Please teach me how to swim.
Drowning is the second leading cause of accidental death in children. Swim America Sonoma aims to reduce this number in Sonoma Valley by providing swim lessons for your child at Hanna Center. Children age 3 and up are welcome. Visit our website at swimamericasonoma.org or call 707-938-9938.
I learned to swim with Swim America at Hanna Center.
Please teach me how to swim.
Register now for summer swim classes at the Hanna Center.
And now back to The Morning Show.
Gunged back in at 9:43. I'm Marcia Meekumber, your host for another 15 minutes or so. And we're going to talk now with Deborah Myers is with us from Deborah Myers Wellness. Deborah is a certified acupressurist, Jinshin Jitsu practitioner, wellness coach, and also a recipient of the President's Lifetime Achievement Award. Deborah, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm always pleased to be here with you, Marcia.
It's always a lot of fun. I think it's a great way to end the show today, too.
Yeah.
Because we can all get back in our bodies. We can get aligned. Mm-hmm. You know, just hearing about redlining and noise pollution starts to get my body all kind of jittery, you know, from that kind of interference that comes through. And we don't need that in our day, right?
No, we don't. But the thing is, as we all know, is that it's out there. The noise is out there. The information is out there. The perceptions that we get, that we create within ourselves emotionally and mentally, as well as physically, because all of that turns into physical reaction. That's, you know, we're physical human beings.
That's right.
And if we can help our bodies feel that space of, you know, this is where I profess, right? If we can help our bodies walk around in such a state of energetic balance and harmony that no matter what's going on around us, our bodies are aligned to the extent that we're better prepared for what we're going to ask our bodies to do and better prepared for whatever might come at it. And that is cognitive processing whatever emotions, feeling the feelings, and allowing them to be without having them take our breath away, et cetera. Just feel, find the way to find joy. And then the physical manifestation. Yeah. As human beings, our go-to is that we don't even give attention to our bodies normally until all of a sudden there's something going on physically.
Yeah.
That's the last manifestation more often than not for us to finally tune up, listen to our bodies and say, oh, you're asking for something.
Yes, and that could be anything from food to healthcare.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
So, but if we pay a little bit of attention earlier on, a little bit every day, mm-hmm. and listen, we might be better prepared to set up our whole body and our environment for a happier, more controlled day, one which, you know, if things are being flung at you left and right unexpectedly, you can better put your shields up, let them bounce off of you, or if it's something you want, better absorb them.
Exactly. So beautifully said. And you said it also with the word environment. I believe that your body, each and every one of our bodies, is an environment in and of itself. And when we treat it as the house we walk around in, when we treat it as this universe, this almost like it's our global earth within us, that we are taking better care. We're being better partners with our bodies. And when that happens, we are in a better position to not only take care of ourselves, but to take care of others, to be there for the others.
Yeah.
So it's with that in mind that, as you well know, I wrote the 9-step self-help acupressure mm-hmm. flow that I call the Daily Cleaner House Flow.
Yep.
It's 9 steps that recognize that your body is your house, and if you clean it out every day, you're ahead of the game. Yeah. Get rid of the dust bunnies and cobwebs and give it a good vacuum. And that's guess right. what? There's no such thing as too much self-help. So you can do it multiple times a day.
Yes. There's no,
and the steps can be used separately. And if your listeners are interested, they can easily go to my website, DeborahMyersWellness.com, and click on the bottom tab of every page. It says, get your Stress Buster video now.
Yep.
And it's yours for free.
Right.
You just have to pop in your name and email address, and it's yours for free. It used to be a pay for it item product. And then when March 2020 hit, I made it a gift for everybody, and I've kept it that way.
Yeah. So it's filled with great tips to help you get realigned, take your breath back, feel centered again, back in your body, and less like you can't cope with daily life being flung at you from outside your environment, what might be intruding on your environment. So
true. Yeah. And we can piggyback on what Chris Burdick said about noise when we talk about that, Marcia, because noise is out there.
Yeah, we have to cope with it one way or another.
Yeah, and it can be beautiful noise. Mm-hmm. Noise doesn't have to be bad. Can be beautiful, can be the joys of the birds singing.
That's right.
Can be the joys of listening to the beautiful music, whatever it might be. And at the same time, when there's other stuff out there that has a potential ability to impact our sense of well-being, it would be very important to recognize that we can be proactive. So it isn't as much of an effect. So it doesn't create anxiousness. Angst, worry, whatever word you want to put to it. So with that in mind, if I may throw out an energy tip to go along with the helping your body reflect back the noise that you don't want to take in, that you'd prefer not to, this is going to sound funny, but not to chew on. Because everything that comes towards us, if we decide to take it in, we chew on it, we taste it. If it's good, we salivate over it and swallow it. If it's not, we can spit it out. Think of the words we use. We spit out those words, right?
Mm-hmm.
We spit them out. Or if it goes down and it's icky, we end up with a sour stomach. We end up with confusion. Right. We confuse gut. I mean, all sorts of phrases that come towards it. So no matter what we are bringing in, once it's in, it has to be moved out.
Yes, one way or another.
So I would like to suggest that if there's anything going on with whatever is going on in your world, but let's even, and it can reflect on anything, but I'm going to reflect on what Chris said with noise. I'd love to have you recognize that one of the easiest things you can do for yourself is have your right hand cup your right shoulder. So your fingertips are at the top inside corner of that shoulder blade. And most people find that a little tight anyway. And just to case in point, bring the left one over to the left one, left top inside corner of the shoulder blade. And just feel, do your fingertips sink in? Or is it more like a 2x4? Two 2x4s. If it's two 2x4s, let's talk, or we'll figure something out for you. But just hold for a few moments. Now take your left hand from that space and bring it down to your chest, your left chest, right below your collarbone. Light, gentle touch, folks. Does not have to be firm, deep pressure, just barely using your fingertips. You may even feel the pulse, and that's the pulse of the energy. Feel that?
Mm-hmm.
And then switch your hands. You are connecting with your immune system, with your lymphatic system, with your nervous system. Just by doing this, it works so well, it even filters out bad air. So imagine using this when you're traveling.
Yeah.
If it filters out bad air, it also filters out bad noise. So think about the proximity. Everything in this area, from like your forehead down into your collarbone, is reflecting what you are taking in. Your ears, your eyes, your sense of smell, anything you're tasting, feeling, expressing, voicing. And if you just lightly touch, and just lightly touch, you are giving a gift to your body, to yourself, to allow whatever's going on to not be taken in as deeply or as extensively as sometimes what's going on around us wants to have it happen. We don't have any control over that, what other folks want or right. What other intentions are. What you have as an individual, you can have the intention of being a protector for yourself, of being your best partner ever.
Right.
And what I just showed you, told you about, is also going to be a benefit for that thing called allergies. I have to throw that one in.
Yeah.
Because it's supposed to be beyond allergy season.
Yeah, but people are all going nuts right now. Yeah. Allergies are hanging on. The air is very dry.
Yeah.
The earth is very dry.
So dry. And so in that dryness, the pollens are acting crazier. Our nostrils, our nasal passages, our eustachian tubes, everything is being more impacted. So what I just showed you will also help with that. On my website, there's an article I just wrote that's all about allergies. Mm-hmm. And there's a bunch of energy tips in there. So please check it out. And if you want extra assistance, just text me or whatever and say, what else can I do?
Right. And again,
for prefer people not having to walk around like that.
Yes, it's uncomfortable. And if you missed Deborah's announcement, her website is DeborahMyersWellness.com. So that's where you find that. And again, on the bottom, in the footer, you can find the free video. You just fill in the form and you'll get the link to the free video. They can get you the 9 housekeeping steps there to help you start the day, keep the day going, finish the day, however it works best for you.
Yeah.
Because you might be doing it throughout the day. What else is going on, Deborah?
Oh, my goodness. My passion is to bring everything we're talking about into the youth, to children of all ages.
Yes.
And all ages. And so I've been in local schools teaching a school assembly, workshop for parents, workshop for teachers. I call it the Productive Mindfulness School Program. And I've had this wanting, if you will, trying not to go into wanting so much as the plan without a push. I've always wanted to bring this into a complete virtual online package. so that people everywhere can make use of it no matter where you are. And it's getting closer to that. I had this aha when I was in LA in Hollywood a few weeks back for a media day opportunity. And it was this realization, it was with all these people from all over the world. And I have all this information and everybody wants it because they want to know more. They want to know how to make use of it. And I need to have that as an actual click on here product. And I'm getting really closer to it.
Cool.
So I'm feeling really good about that. And it's going to be tricky with the school assembly to have that be virtual, because if you've ever seen me in action when I'm with kids, oh my God, I'm the biggest kid on the block, and I love to get them interacting all about, you know, energy and what do you love to do and what do you want to do better and how are we going to help that happen? Well, let's show you.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing I'm seeing more and more, Marcia, is when I'm with these children in all sorts of schools and environments, is how many of them aren't being shown in a deep level that they can be a success, that each and every one of them can be who they want to be and do what they want to do and do it even better than they ever expected. And the trick is to get out of their own way. But how do you get out of your own way if you're not having that behavior, that that attitude modeled?
Yes.
Right?
Challenging.
And what's beautiful is we can do it for ourselves, and that's what I love showing these kids. And when I went to his open house at a school after the whole program and had a 9-year-old walk up to me and say, Deborah, I'm doing the daily clean your house flow every day. And it works. And then he went and got his parents and brought them over to introduce me. This is the lady who taught me how to do that. So he brought it home. I mean, that's how beautiful cool. is that?
That is really cool.
So that's what I want to do more of. And if I can't do it always in person, why not make it available as a package? Because I just received notification from a colleague who's a healthcare educator, but more than that is a educator.
Mm-hmm.
And she's in Columbia right now working with a number of families and creating a school. Nice. And she's making use of what I've, and to get those comments from the kids.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's in Columbia.
And that's great. And believe it or not, we're already out of time.
Oh my.
It always flies when I talk with you. So it's a lot of fun. So listeners want to know more, want to get the Daily House Clean Flow all set for yourself so you can feel like the kids in Columbia and the kids in LA who teach their parents how to do it. DeborahMyersWellness.com. Deborah.
It works for all ages.
That's right, all ages. It's not limited to kids. So there you go. Deborah, thank you so much for your time again this morning. Really appreciate it.
I appreciate you, and I love it that when you reach out and say, let's do this.
Yeah. More. All right. Thanks, Deborah. You have a great week. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, listeners, we are out of time. Simon Says Sports is coming up in just a couple of minutes. I'll be back with another new show, great show, next Monday morning at 8 o'clock. And I hope you have a fabulous week. Supposed to be a great day. Don't forget, prescribed burn today on the Montini Reserve. So don't freak out over the flames and the smoke. Very important. Have a great day, everybody. Bye-bye.
Don't let me hear you say life's taking you nowhere.
Angel,
come love me, baby. Look at that sky, life's begun. Nights are warm and the days are young.
Come love me, baby.
Lose my faith and lost my soul. Opening doors and pulling some strings.
Angel,
in walk luck and you looked in time. Never look back, walk tall, act fine.
Thousand years,
put this golden touch you in these golden years.
KSVY Sonoma.
Programming for KSVY is brought to you in part by
The Schoen Group, located in beautiful downtown Sonoma. The Schoen Group is affiliated with Sotheby's International Realty. Our goal is